You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everyone. This is Mallory, and I am recording this a few days after Noah came on the show. That's the episode that you're about to listen to. We recorded this, as well as several upcoming episodes before the election, and then the election happened. So I'm just back in the studio today to address that, because it seemed wildly inappropriate to release something full of regular discussion and jokes without acknowledging what happened this last week. When it comes to offering advice, I think it can be helpful when something like this happens to look for small, discreet ways to be useful, because otherwise it can be easy to start thinking ahead 4 years at a time, and in terms of what could happen and what might happen and what may be happening already. So if you are distressed and considering what is something that you can do, I think now would be an excellent time, if you are not already a member of the ACLU, to become one. If your membership has lapsed, to renew it, to offer them a donation of whatever size you may be capable of. There's a great many legal battles ahead for them, and they can use all the help that they can get. Also, Planned Parenthood would be another wonderful place to offer time, money, resources, whatever you've got available. That's always a good idea, but especially now, as well as the Southern Poverty Law Center, which does a lot of excellent advocacy work. Something else that you might consider doing is reaching out to the mosques and the Muslim community centers in your area, just offering a message of goodwill, and ask if they need any help with any kind of volunteer work, if they need help, like, you know, cleaning the floors or stuffing envelopes. This is an especially terrifying time to be in America if you are a follower of Islam, and I think that that would be a helpful way to offer some comfort and goodwill to your neighbors, which I think is a good thing to do at all times. This is strange. I have not done this before for the show. I find myself a little bit more at a loss for words than I would have liked. I'm thinking of all of you today. I know that there are a lot of listeners of the show who are deeply affected by this election, and who I'm very... I just wish I could do more. I think it is a mistake to talk about this election in terms of economics. Somebody else said, we're all worried about money, but only some of us voted for the white supremacist. I think it is an illusion of moral responsibility to claim that a vote for Donald Trump was anything other than a vote for white supremacy. And I think that any attempts to do so should be met with resistance and disavowal. I believe that strongly to be true. I believe that it is not especially important to be civil. I sometimes find calls for civility to be mealy-mouthed and unnecessary. I'm not sure why it is important to be civil to great wrong. I don't encourage any of you to go out and punch a motherfucker. That would not be prudent. But I think sometimes there are more important things than civility. and that that is something important to remember when you hear calls for balance or giving someone a chance. I think it is strange to think that someone who has been very clear and upfront about the kind of person they are and the kind of values they espouse for really their entire career, but especially the last 18 months, and then to say perhaps it will be different now that they have been given power. I don't believe that's the case. I don't believe that there is some secret restraining force that is about to come out and walk him back from some of the things that he's promised to do. I think any attempts to say maybe it will be different from what we've been told is a desire to not believe what is right in front of us. And I don't believe that that's an appropriate response to reality. I think one of the most upsetting truths about the election is that 53% of white women voted for Donald Trump. And as a white woman, I think that's something that's really important to acknowledge, that the majority of us chose whiteness over everything else. And that there is a rottenness within mainstream white feminism that has been there from the beginning, that has sought to bring white women up to the level of white men and then pull the ladder back up and forget about everyone else. I don't say that to say that all white women who are feminists are bad people. I think that's fairly clear. I just want to sort of address the not all white women response before getting one. I think this was a collective moral failure on the part of white women to look out for other women, and that that has to be acknowledged, and that however we move forward from this election, we cannot do so by pretending that the majority of white women stand in solidarity with other women, because we don't and we didn't, and that that is shameful and wrong. It was a collective moral failure to do the right thing. I hope that you enjoy the rest of the podcast. I hope that you are taking good care of yourselves and the people that you love. And thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence. Do you think that I should contact him again?
Help.
Help.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Dear Prudence podcast. I am, as always, Dear Prudence and Mallory Ortberg, both in the same person. This week on the show, we have Noah Culwin, who is a longtime friend of the Dear Prudence podcast, as well as the technology editor at Vice News. Hi, Noah.
Hi.
I'm going to go ahead and read this first one. The subject of this
go
one is
it.
Goddaughter versus nephews. My sister and I are not especially close. I am religious and very active in my church, while my sister is a rather bitter atheist, although given our background, I can understand why. Our father was a preacher who had multiple affairs and paraded his conquests in front of our mother. I once made the mistake of talking to my nephews about my faith when they were younger, and my sister reacted angrily and limited our relationship to cards and Thanksgiving at our mother's house. I really don't know my nephews beyond Facebook interactions and what my mother tells me, even though we live in the same town. My problem is this. My goddaughter is turning 16 soon, and I had planned on giving her my old car as a gift. My mother mentioned it in passing to my sister, and she got furious. She called me up and wanted to know why I didn't give the car to my nephew when he turned 16 last month. I sent my nephew $50 for his birthday, but I don't know him as a person. I've been involved in my goddaughter's life since she was in diapers, from figure skating to figuring out where she wants to go to college. Her parents are among my oldest and dearest friends. I don't have that with my sister. My husband is angry, my mother is upset, and I don't want to lose what's left of my relationship with my sister, especially with the holidays coming. Can you see any way through this? This is like 100%. We got religion, we got inheritance, we got sibling rivalry, we got it all. This is definitely going to
work. Oh, it's so good.
Oh, man.
So the first thing, I have like one really big question mark, and I'm not quite sure if it'll relate to how you deal with this woman's advice, but she said her husband is angry, and she never really explains why. And I'm so curious as to what like could be like, you know, making her husband mad in this. Like,
yeah.
Like whose side he's on or whatever.
He has no dog in this fight.
That kind of tripped me out.
Yeah, my big question is, like, she says she talked about her faith with her nephews a long time ago, and I want so badly to find out, like,
What do you mean? Like, did you say, I'm religious and I go to church and your sister overreacted? Or were you like, hey, kids, your mom's an atheist, but it's just because our dad cheated on our mom. And like, here's the truth. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many different ways she could have had that conversation. I really wish I knew what she said.
Right. I mean, at first I had a lot of trouble thinking about what to do here because there was just so much missing. But then I thought of something that like kind of struck me, and it didn't seem to me like she's done yet, which is talk to the nephew, like talk to like, you know, he may want the car, but I feel like he's the principal in this situation and very little. She didn't talk too much about him. And I feel like talking with him and using sort of him as a way to figure out, like, what does he want and what does he expect, and explaining like, hey, listen, we haven't had much of a relationship and I already committed and was planning on doing this thing. But I want you to know, like, I'm here for you if you'd ever like something, or perhaps something like that is sort of an entryway to mediating the conflict.
Yeah, that's tricky. It's hard because, like, he's 16. He's not a child anymore. So, like, if you're ever going to have a relationship with him, it's going to have to start being, like, you know, not mediated exclusively through his mother. But it's also not clear, like, is he even mad? Does he even care? Like, he maybe does not want a car. Maybe he wants other things that
yeah, like, what if,
given.
What if this whole thing is just, like, a proxy fight for his for this woman's sister? Like, it could also be that, you know, she's sort of like using the nephew grievance, and like that like this is like some way to act that out. I mean, it just the whole thing seems like a little messy, but well, I feel like talking with the nephew and maybe, you know, approaching him as like a bit of an adult and feeling that out would be one way to really to see what the real situation is and what he wants.
Yeah, I mean, part of the problem, right, is that this is a conversation that should have been had about like 13 years ago. This is actually like 50 conversations that they have not had. I'm actually rereading this as we're talking right now, and I'm not sure that the letter writer ever apologized. Again, like, it's possible that like what she said was relatively mild and her sister overreacted. It's also possible that she really overstepped her bounds and like tried to impart religious doctrine to her nephews in a way that was super inappropriate. Either way, it's definitely okay for a parent to say, hey, please don't like give my children like a religious lecture if I don't want that.
I've not encountered many folks who like identify as atheist and who make a point of identifying as atheist and giving their kids the option to talk about like to grow up without like, you know, the faith of like their parents or grandparents or whatever, who have, you know, actually reacted like furiously when faith is discussed. Like, there's really got to be something more there on either end of it.
Right.
But that did strike me as like kind of a red flag. Like, I was just sort of confused. Like, what you were saying earlier, like, talk about faith. What does that mean?
Because, like, again, the letter writer said, I made the mistake of talking to them about my faith. My sister reacted angrily and limited our relationship to cards and Thanksgiving. And again, it's possible that the sister, like, really overreacted and, like, put the clamp down. But it also doesn't sound like the letter writer ever apologized or tried to get close again. It sounds like she was kind of like, well, that's too bad. And I wonder if, like, part of what needs to happen is you need to acknowledge, like, hey, I clearly really hurt you when I tried to, like, share my religious beliefs with your young children. And I just want you to know, like, I would love to be close with you guys. I also want you to trust me. I don't want you to worry that you can't leave me with your kids without my trying to convince them that they should be religious in the same way that I am. Like, that's maybe the conversation you guys should have had after you made that mistake. But it sounds like you were kind of like, oh, if she's going to like cut me off, fine. Like, I don't care. I'll just sort of like let us be distant to one another. And that's how you get in a position like this now, where your sister seems like feels really conflicted of like, I resent you, but it also hurts me to see you like treat your goddaughter the way that I wish you could treat my nephews. But yeah, this is tricky. It's also like an acknowledgement of reality. You don't know your nephews. You're not close. You guys have really like gone for the full Cold War here. And now you're mad.
I mean, I feel like the only way out of this is to like, I feel like there isn't really any satisfying way to go back to like detente. Like, you have to say like, all right, like if this is the time perhaps to like reassess, like my nephew's 16, he's like going to become an adult soon. This has like gone on long enough. Like, he's probably enough of an adult that there's not really anything you could say in talking about your faith that would suddenly win him over so dramatically. Like, I feel like part of this is also that like the time to like address this tension is now. Like, yeah. It's perhaps Perhaps the letter writer should see this as an opportunity.
Ho-ho! Yeah. Yeah. And I think the important thing to bear in mind here is, like, no one's about to be damaged, right? Like, the worst thing that could happen to either one of these kids is that they don't get a car when they're 16. So bearing that in mind, like, the car is definitely a symbol of closeness and affection and all sorts of different, like, familial ties. But, like, your nephew's going to be fine and your goddaughter's going to be fine. So you kind of have to ask yourself, like, if I have a conversation with my sister and we really, like, hash things out and she says, I really wish you would give my son a car. Like, would you be willing to do that? Would that be meaningful to you? Would that make you feel like this could be the beginning of a new kind of relationship? Or would you feel like, hey, I want to get to know you guys better. I want to be close, but I love my goddaughter. I'm really close with her. I've promised her the car. It's my car. That's what I'm choosing to do with it.
But then use the opportunity to be like, but listen, I feel like this reflects, like, this problem that we've had. It kind of just addresses the fact that, like, we should be more in touch and communicative about one another's lives and involved.
Yeah. Cause if it's about what the car represents, I'm a little more sympathetic to your sister. If it's just the car and she was perfectly happy to keep you at arm's length for 16 years, but now that there's a car in the offing, she's like, nope, we're close. We're family. You have to give it. That's a little shitty. And, if that's the read you're getting from her, like, I think it's really appropriate to say, like, no, I'm giving the car to my goddaughter. I'd love to get to know you guys better. I'd love to reconnect, but I'm not going to, like, buy your son's affection. And if her response to that is really lousy, then, you know, maybe you'll have to stick to casual Facebook interactions. Like, that would be a shame. But I don't think you owe them a car. Like, I think you owe them basic kindness and respect. But I don't get the read from this letter that this person's, like, desperate to repeat the religious indoctrination thing. Like, I think she may absolutely have overstepped a bound years ago, but it's clearly, like, she understands that her sister's an atheist. She's like, I get it. I'm not going to try to, like, convert her children. So I'm not worried for them on that sense. And I think you should, like, definitely have the conversation, be willing to hear her out, but you don't owe her son a car because you talked to him about church one time. Would you like to read our next letter?
Yes, this one is, the subject is girlfriend or administrator. Before I met my boyfriend, I rented a nice apartment with 3 bedrooms in order to sublet 2 of them to support myself financially through grad school. My boyfriend knew about this when he moved in and agreed to pay rent as any other roommate. 2 years later, I graduated and recently got back to the workforce, so a few months ago, we let go our remaining roommate and started paying equal rent. Because our landlady is very senior, she is used to me and the contract was in my name. I always make the arrangements to pay her in cash. This month, she demanded $80 extra for some repairs that technically she had to cover, but to avoid any problems, I personally paid that. Days later, she said there was $150 missing from the envelope I gave her with the rent money. I'm absolutely sure that I did pay her in full. I counted the bills minutes before I gave them to her, and she signed a receipt. But I know that if I don't concede, she will evict us. The contract expired a while ago. So I told my boyfriend that we should pay half and half of that $150. He doesn't think so. He said it is my responsibility and my fault for not counting the money in front of her, but that he would give me the $75 in a very condescending tone. When I was profiting from the sublet, I always took care of extra expenses, but now I think that we should take it 50-50. I told him calmly that I find it very disappointing that I even had to ask him, that if it was the opposite case, I would offer to chip in with all the extra expenses of the household. He got very mad and told me that I've only been paying equal rent for a couple months and I shouldn't play the victim for it. I didn't even ask him to pay for the other $80. We now earn the same amount in our jobs, if it matters. What do you think? Is it my fault? Should I pay in full or should we split? So, I just got to say, like, my immediate reaction upon finishing this was, she's got to dump him. Like, dear letter writer, I am so sorry that this guy was, like, such a jerk to you about this, but, like, it's like he's not for you if this is how he's going to treat you. Cause if you owe, like, if he believes you, if he trusts you in a relationship, and you tell him that you believe with like total certainty that you paid your elderly landlord the amount of money that she says she's missing, like, the fact that he doesn't believe you and then gets all preachy and condescending about, like, well, it's your money, you should take care of it, like, that's crazy, and you're the one doing the labor of work of, like, dealing with this woman in the first place. No, like, it's like, you're in the right. you're like, this guy is, he's treating you shabbily, and that you asked if you should pay in full or should we split, I feel like suggests that, that's kind of, those are extremes. And it suggests to me that you sort of know the answer, maybe.
I love that you are taking a strong stance on this. Very few guests have like run out the gate with break up with him over this $75 issue. And I love and admire your forcefulness here, Noah. Thank you. Thank you for this.
Thank you. You're welcome. I'm so on team, like, dump his ass.
I just have so many questions. Like, I'm super worried about this landlady, first of all. I always think that getting rent in cash is at least mildly shady. And I would never be comfortable giving my landlord my rent in cash, even if they did sign a receipt. But my first thought is, like, this woman signed a receipt, which means that, like, presumably at the time she counted the money and agreed that that was how much was there. So now the fact that she's like changing her tone and trying to bilk you out of $150, I'm either worried, you say she's really senior, I'm either worried that she's like experiencing memory issues, or like after years of being a good landlady trying to, you know, jerk you out of $150, which is weird either way.
I mean, the whole thing, like, it's like there's a lot of reasons that, like, the situation doesn't sound ideal. Like, you have, like, the elderly landlady who demands to be, who, like, prefers to be paid in cash or whatever, and is, like, not taking on some of the responsibility for repairs and says that you miscounted the money. Like, that's one stressor. But that at the same time, like, that this woman's partner, her boyfriend, is saying something like, well, you fucked up. It's your responsibility. You know, I'm disappointed in you. You should just get better accounting. That's my advice. Like, what is that? That's so rude.
That is really so rude, especially in that tone of voice. I hope,
like, same team.
Yeah, especially when it's like, again, I know $150 is different for different people, but it sounds like they are both making the kind of money where $150 is not like the difference between being able to eat or not for the week.
Right. What was interesting is that the amount of money was described with, like, the kind of minute detail, and that it didn't sound like this money, like there was no trade-off described. Like, look, that's money that I didn't spend on groceries this week. But it was like the kind of minute description of like this, like, it felt like the money was like a stand-in for like some other issue, because she didn't dwell on what the impact of the money was. It was just that, like, this was the source of the conflict, and there's like all this, like this, like, really weird tension that's erupted, and that's what's more frustrating than like the financial loss.
Yeah.
And she even says, like, you know, we make the same amount so as to make it clear that there is an equal burden here.
No, this is very clearly right. Like, conditions have deteriorated, right? Like, that they're both like, well, I make the same amount of money as you. Well, you've only been paying equal rent for a few months. Well, it's only $80. Like, this is very clearly like not a situation where they feel like we're on the same team. We might experience frustration about the unfairness of the situation, but, like, obviously our priority is each other. Clearly right now the priority is, like, I've got mine, bitch. I'm not giving you an extra cent. Like, they're working on
this
some
is
sort
like
of
the guy,
group project together,
man,
and they're fighting over credit.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sorry.
Yes, this just reminds me of like those like Reddit forums, like where somebody will say like, hey, listen, I signed up for a really bad healthcare package, and I have a huge expense coming up from some medical procedure, and I'm just not sure what to do. Can you help me out? And this is like the guy, like the first Reddit commenter who's like, well, you know, the thing is that you shouldn't have gotten this plan, and that was a really big mistake. And you know, you should have just done more research, and you should have. And it's always like you should have that. It's like never like what's constructive about this? Like, why can't he be like modestly supportive? I don't know. I really dislike this guy.
No, I hear
the limited profile given.
I feel like if I had like a partner who came to me with this story, like my first response would be like, hey, like it's us versus this kind of wacky landlady, not like, I'll give you $80, but I'm going to be the worst about it. So, okay, in no particular order, this is my advice. Like, number one is, you know, it sounds like, you know, it's not worth getting evicted right now over $150. So you're just going to give her the money. But I would also, like, you know, check out, like, your tenant's rights. Like, look back over your contract. Like, she signed a receipt. Like, I think you can at least try to push back and say, like, hey, you signed a receipt. I counted the money. Can you check again? I obviously, like, I'm not encouraging you to, like, burn this bridge and, like, be really, really forceful with her in case, like, she's irrational. But, like, at least give that a shot. And if nothing else, I think this is a good reminder that from now on, like, tell her that you like need requests for additional money in writing and that you want to check your contract before you agree to them. Get a new contract. Like, don't live there without a rental agreement. That is super dangerous for you because, like you said, she could evict you at any moment. And if you can't start paying your rent in checks, try to. I would actually go so far as to say, like, unless your rental agreement specifically forbids paying for your rent in a check, which would be unusual, like, start using checks. Like, get a record so that you can, like, have a bank statement to point to and say, like, actually, this was for the full amount. If nothing else, like, when you pay her your rent, like, stand there and count it with her and, like, don't just get the receipt. Like, take a picture. Like, get more evidence on your side so that she can't, like, if this is going to become a new thing, you know, make sure she can't take that same kind of advantage of you. Take the money. Like, take the money from your boyfriend, right? Like, he offered it begrudgingly, but he offered it. So take it. Absolutely. Be like, yeah, I will take that $75, even if you're going to have a bad attitude about it. And then I'm not going to go so far as to say break up with him. I'm going to go so far as to say have a fight with him. Take the money and tell him that it was frustrating that it felt like he wasn't on your side and that he was looking to blame you and to sort of begrudge you a relatively small amount of money given your relative incomes and see how he handles that. Like, if he's like, hey, you're right, I'm sorry, I was kind of shitty about it and I want to do better, then, you know, that tells you something. And if he's just like a real, you know, cockstick about it, then you can dump him. Then you can take Noah's advice and dump the hell out of him.
Yeah, I mean, Mallory's probably correct, but I say dump him. I don't have the patience, but like Mallory's advice is probably definitely correct here.
It does feel petty to break up over something like this, but I also hate when someone says you shouldn't play the victim. Like, she's not playing the victim; she's asking for
help. There's so many little red flags in this. Like, well, it's your. He said it is my. Like she writes, like, he said it is my responsibility, and then he like got mad and told like and that you shouldn't play the victim. Like, right? That's baloney.
I bet he
that's
only
garbage.
Pulls glasses out of a clean dishwasher when he needs them, and then pretends he didn't know the dishwasher was clean. He's like, oh, was it clean? Uh-huh. Yeah, I guess I can unload it now if you need me to. I was actually about to head out, but I can be late. If he does that, you should kill him, not just break up with him. You should set him on fire and kick him into the sun.
See, I pegged him as the kind of guy who would leave stuff in the washing machine and then get mad that you didn't think to move it.
I feel like we're really making a lot of assumptions about this guy. So maybe, you know, maybe he's got great qualities.
It's
but
just, yeah, you know, I, if... True. If he's like really hot, then
he's really hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Send us a picture. If he's extremely hot, put up with it. But if not, no. This is terrible. All right. I feel like we've helped that as much as we can. Yeah. Check your rental agreements. Try not to pay in cash. Landlords will always try to take advantage of you because landlords have institutional power behind them that you do not.
The real enemy, as always, is capital.
I feel like that's been the theme of too many episodes recently, and I'm afraid I'm going to start getting letters about it, but you're not wrong. So, I did not want to get exclusively tech-themed letters for your visit to the show, but I did get one that I absolutely knew I had to earmark for you.
This is a great letter.
This, again, feels fictional. Not in the sense that it felt like fake, but it was so perfectly set up to fulfill like every check mark of this particular trope that it just feels like it feels too good to be true. And by too good to be true, I mean the worst. I'm just gonna read it is what I'm gonna do. The subject is torn up on Twitter. Oh, I just have this feeling in the pit of my stomach. All right, here we go. I'm engaged to be married to my best friend. Always a bad start, by the way. Always bad. When someone says that they're marrying their best friend, I don't know what it is. I just get the worst feeling in the world, like something horrible is about to happen.
Oh,
I don't know why.
I think of man's best friend, so I always imagine that they're about to marry their dog. And I'm like, that's just gross. That's weird.
That's definitely not what I think. It always feels like something bad's about to... All right. No. Okay. No more commentary. I'm going to read this letter. I'm engaged to be married to my best friend. We have a loving and supportive relationship. And until recently, I couldn't have been happier. A year ago, when he first told me he liked me, I initially turned him down, telling him that I saw him as a friend and nothing more. He avoided me for about a month before I realized how much I missed him, and as a result, we started going out. Then he proposed, and things were going great until a few weeks ago, when I opened up his Twitter account to try to come up with gift ideas for our one-year anniversary, and I found a series of tweets he'd made while he was avoiding me. That I was a bitch who didn't deserve a nice guy like him, how he wasted his time hanging out with me without getting any reward, how, when he stayed up with me all night when I cried over my grandmother's death, he should have just left me alone and gone home. He shared personal things I told him in confidence, and all his friends on Twitter called me a bitch for not going out with him. I was hurt, shocked, and confused. He was my best friend, and I never would have imagined he thought that way about me. I immediately confronted him about what I saw, and he was apologetic, saying that he was hurting from being rejected, and he was just venting. But I don't know if I can trust him anymore. I love him so much, but I feel incredibly hurt and betrayed. Am I overreacting? I thought I was marrying my best friend, but now I'm considering calling it off. You need a better best friend. Is my first and only thought. Noah?
I agree. I hate to be like, you know, Mr. like to play Mr. Dump his ass, but dump his
yeah, you
ass.
Really, you started so strong with the last one that I feel like you have nowhere to go on this one, but you expand, you know, go on.
I mean, it's so like, okay, for starters, like the fact that he in this telling, so the letter writer says she logged onto his Twitter account to like, you know, look up gift ideas or whatever. She doesn't say if he was upset about that. And because she doesn't, and she says that he was immediately apologetic, that kind of leads me to believe one of two things, which is one, they're the kind of couple who trust each other with like their Twitter accounts, which, wow, that's impressive. And then the second one is that like he was immediately apologetic. Like he knew he fucked up. Like he knew he screwed up.
Wait. No, hang on. I don't think she like pulled up and logged into his Twitter account. I think these are people who like maybe she doesn't check Twitter very often. I think she literally just
oh my gosh,
up
you're right.
His timeline. Yeah. No. She that's not even the issue here. She just looked at his public facing tweets from a year
man.
Ago. Like he didn't even bother to delete them.
That makes it even worse.
When they got engaged.
Man, okay, so that's the other thing is like his thing is that like his reasoning for why he like was a giant dick on Twitter was that he said he was hurting from being rejected. Like if you're hurting from being rejected and that's like the stressor that sends you off on Twitter to like call your ex a bitch and stuff, like then like no, you can't trust that guy. Like I'm sorry that like your best friend sucks so hard and that you're engaged to marry him, but like he is totally gonna burn you in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get like too far afield into discussing like nice guy syndrome because I feel like the internet's already like delved into that issue pretty thoroughly. But yeah, you know, people do not owe you sex and romantic love because you like are there for them when their grandmother dies. That's actually like a pretty normal component of friendship, and you should do that for friends that you do not secretly wish to bone. That's actually like a pretty horrific claim for him to make that like because you did not immediately comply in becoming his girlfriend when he wanted you to, he was therefore somehow like manipulated out of something by being nice to you when your grandmother died. That's actually just like basic human kindness.
I was like just kind of stunned. Like that part really rubbed me the wrong way. Just as like it's a like very. Like, you're right about, you don't want to get, like, too far afield with the trope in particular, but it's just, like, he doesn't, like, that he had ever at any point, like, within the last couple of years, like, you know, this isn't, like, a youthful indiscretion kind of thing. Like, I was, like, young and dumb and I didn't know any better, but I've grown into a different person. This was a, like, relatively recent thing. That's the period of atonement for that kind of fuck up is it's longer than what it's been based on the description of this letter.
This guy literally doesn't understand what friendship is.
It's crazy.
You know, he thinks it's a series of quarters you inject into someone until they fuck you.
It's just like, okay, one grandma death like vigil is like that's definitely sex.
Equal
like, that's
to
crazy.
3 months of dating or something, right? Like, yeah, he doesn't understand what friendship is. And this guy's dumb as shit, right?
He's
this
so
is a public
dumb.
Facing
He's so
Twitter
dumb.
Account.
Oh,
and
my
he
God.
Left those tweets up for anyone to see. He's not even. He doesn't even have like the basic spatial awareness to cover his tracks. Like he's stupid.
And that was the thing that also blew me away. It's just like, don't like, it's bad form for anybody to like say bad things about like exes and whatever on like in public places. Like, it's like, just don't do it. Like it's not, it's just like a really good, like hard rule that will always keep you out of trouble. Like,
no matter how satisfying it feels in the moment. And honestly, even if it's really justified, it often looks embarrassing for the person who does it, right? And he doesn't even have it. Like, this behavior would barely be understandable if she had, like, cheated on him. You know what I mean? All she did was say, I don't want to go out with you, which is actually an answer you're allowed to give to someone when they ask you out. That's sort of how asking someone out works.
And then on top of which was that, like in that, like, you know, like, she, like, I feel like what's so weird is that, like, you know, like, so frequently you hear, like, these stories about, like, yeah, like, you know, like, that, you know, she didn't want to go out with me, like, fuck her, whatever, she sucks. And then instead, you know, like, in this case, like, she came back around. She, like, thought about it. Like, there was, like a degree of normalcy to the fact that, like, you know, she said no, and then she thought about it, and she came back, and then it went, like, it's... I don't know. I just feel like this is a really convincing case for just not giving people second chances. But like,
yeah. Like, no. And just like that he's like, oh, I was hurting and that's why I did it. Like when you're hurt, you cry. You eat a bunch of ice cream. You don't go on shots of whiskey at the bar. You don't share secrets somebody told you on Twitter and say that they're a bitch and you wish you'd never been nice to them when their grandmother died. Like that's actually not an appropriate response to rejection. And if he thinks that that's like a... Like, oh, yeah, I realize those are really lousy things, but I was hurt. Like, that's actually not a good excuse. That's a bad way to respond to being hurt. And like, part of what you should look for in a person you want to marry is what's their character? Like, what do they do when they don't get what they want? How do they handle disappointment? How do they handle frustration? How do they treat other people even when other people hurt them? And if his response to a woman saying, I'm glad we're friends, but I don't want to go out with you is... Cool. I'm going to tell the internet personal things you share with me in confidence and say that I regretted being with you in your time of mourning. That's not a good person. That's not a person also, who cares about you.
I would also say that one thing in the letter that kind of stuck out to me was that also the letter writer said he shared personal things I told him in confidence and all his bros on Twitter. That there was also like, I mean, she's like she... Like, I don't want to read into this, like, it's like a Twitter bro thing, but like, the thing that I did feel was kind of interesting about that, at least, was that, like, oh, like, that's like, those, like, that's the place where he goes to vent. Like, that's like where his, like, experience of male camaraderie is, which suggests that his friends suck too. Like,
yeah, that's just something with the kind of people he keeps company with that no one was like, hey, guy, this is actually
like, hey, that's
a disproportionate response. Yeah. Yeah, this is a bad dude. He's stupid. He doesn't know what friendship is. His friends don't know what friendship is. He will do this to you again. I promise you. Like,
yeah,
in the future, when you do something that he doesn't like, he's going to tell your secrets to other people. He's going to find a way to talk shit about you behind your back. He's going to betray your confidences. And he's going to be keeping a little scorecard in the back of his head of all the nice things he does for you. Not because he loves you.
He has a spreadsheet.
He has a spreadsheet. Of like how many times he listens to you talk about the people in your life that matter to you. And he's just like, well, that's earned me like whatever relationship bonuses I think that I deserve. And he's a bad dude and you should definitely break up with him. And I'm really sorry that this is how you had to find out that he was such a piece of shit. But
you are not overreacting and you'll do fine. He sucks.
Yep. Yep. He's secretive. He's cowardly. He's selfish. He's dumb. He's the worst. I hate him.
Same.
Thank you so much for coming on the show and helping us just address all the ills of the world, Noah.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a delight.
Before we go, I would like to remind you all that when it comes to the Dear Prudence column, to accept no substitutes. Recently, I have been informed that there is a fake version of the Dear Prudence column floating around, and someone actually sent it to me, and it's the greatest thing I've ever seen, and I'm so worried that one person might see it and even for a second think that it was me, because it takes a position that I find morally abhorrent, but this is amazing. So I want to warn you all about this and share in this exciting situation with you and make sure that you all know not to trust it in future. Recently, I was contacted by an adjunct professor at a California college whose adjunct professors recently unionized, which is great. Unions are wonderful. And they had also recently gotten, because it's been, you know, a long and contentious process, a copy, a physical copy of the Dear Prudence column in their faculty mailbox. And every member of the faculty
had gotten it. And it was an incredibly specific column that was about their incredibly specific situation. And this person who was writing to me wanted to know if I had written the column in question, which was in fact like kind of poorly photoshopped. But it's called A Growing Divide. My colleagues are making it difficult to work with, trust, and respect them. And it's this incredibly long letter about how the union has just brought strife and conflict to the situation, and just a list of these incredibly petty resentments that the person who wrote this has against their colleagues. And then this really long, flowery response from me that's just, oh, I understand your concern. Drama has become the norm in society, and especially on college campuses, which I just have to say, I am really offended that someone thinks I would ever write the sentence, drama has become the norm in our society. I don't even know what that means. Like, drama just means conflict, I think. It's an amazing sentence. I could parse it for 100 years and still not understand what they thought I was trying to say. But it's just like amazing, and I find it morally reprehensible, and it's beautiful and wonderful, and I'm so glad that someone did this, but it's also just amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing. I want to kiss it gently on the forehead. And I also, even more than that, want to make sure everyone knows that I did not write this, and that I have no interest in like helping some angry anti-unionist tabulate their petty resentments. So in case you are working at some sort of office or factory or campus that has recently unionized and you see a physical copy of the column turning up in your mailbox, you know, double check it against the archives that we have online and ask yourself, does this have the ring of truth? Bite it to see if it bends, which I think is what people used to do with old coins. Oh, this is just amazing. This is so amazing. No, this is the worst thing I've ever read. It's just really beautiful the way that like fake prudence really praises the letter writer in the way that you do when you write fake letters, like reminding yourself of how great you are and how awful everyone else is. At one point, I say that you've been exhibiting bottomless amounts of patience, which I bet they haven't. You know, if you need a fake advice columnist to tell you that you've been endlessly patient, you probably haven't been. You're probably really mad at everyone and don't want to be patient ever again for the rest of your life. So, just wanted to remind you, in case somebody writes a really long, extended version of the column about a wildly specific situation in your workplace, probably didn't come from me. And I don't think you're as patient as you think you are. Thanks for listening to Dear Prudence. Our producer is Casey Miner. Our theme music was composed by Robin Hilton. Steve Lichtai is the executive producer of Slate Podcasts. And Andy Bowers is the chief content officer of Panoply. Remember, you can always hear more Prudence by joining Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/plus to sign up. You can always hear less Prudence by taking off your headphones. If you like this show, please go to iTunes and write us a review. Reviews help new listeners find the podcast, and then they write reviews, and then more people write reviews, and then you get more questions and more advice. Just search for Slate Dear Prudence. If you want me to answer your question, call me and leave a message at 401-371-DEAR, that's 3327, and you might hear your answer on an episode of the show. You don't have to use your real name or location, and at your request, we can even alter the sound of your voice. Keep it to about 30 seconds, a minute tops, and send it to me at prudencepodcast@gmail.com.